Kyle Smith's novel Love Monkey is about a 32-year-old self-described man-boy who stockpiles electronics, owns 43 t-shirts, watches The Simpsons 3.7 times a week, and flosses 3.7 times a year. His most time-consuming hobby is collecting ex-girlfriends, and when he actually falls for a woman, he doesn't know quite how to handle it. The main character, Tom, writes for a daily tabloid in New York. Kyle Smith is the music and book review editor for People magazine. Love Monkey has been described as belonging to a new genre known as lad lit. But our book critic Maureen Corrigan said, quote, "Give me a break. We've had 2,000 years of canonical lad lit. Life as rendered in writing from a male point of view is the oldest trick in the book. No, in fact, what's hippest about Love Monkey, and I expect its chest-thumping guy supporters to shudder at this analogy, is the deft way it resurrects and updates the Dorothy Parker style of talking about New York City, brittle, shrewd, self-deprecating, and so very witty." Unquote. Let's start with a short reading from Love Monkey.
"I don't have a girlfriend now. I played the field, and the field won. This makes me slightly suspect. What's wrong with me? Am I gay? I wish. Non-stop guiltless action, plus you get to be good-looking and tasteful, and all you have to do is wear a condom, which I seem to end up doing most of the time anyway. A lot of vaguely intellectual, feministy New York girls seem to think the pill is a male plot to give them cancer or something, a conspiracy they discuss over cigarettes. Am I unable to share my deep feelings? Do I lack any deep feelings in the first place? Am I just picky? Possibly. But at 32, it starts to hit you. There's a fine line between picky and loser. Despite my flaws, I've had a more or less standard number of girlfriends. I have dated 3 different Jennifers, which puts me slightly below average for a guy my age, and 2 Asian girls, way below average. I have dated girls who quote Joni Mitchell and girls who quote Madonna, girls who cry inexplicably and girls who go all women's studies on you if you call them girls, girls who like to be taken to flashy parties, and girls who like to stay home with Fred Astaire. They all have 2 things in common. Every one of them was better looking, for a girl, than I am for a guy, and every one of them has improved me in some way. A few personality renovations I owe to them, stopped wearing white crew socks with my khakis, began wearing belt every day, stopped wiping nose on sleeve when anyone is looking, learned key girl terms, such as mule, bias cut, empire waist, blowout, etc., essential to understanding most girl conversations. There are advantages to girl friendlessness. No one to monitor alcohol consumption. Breakfast cereal, not just for breakfast. Can watch midget boxing if I feel like it. Very little time wasted discussing one's emotional issues and picking at one's family-inflicted scar tissue. If want sexual experience before I go to sleep, no need to be nice to hand all day. During, need not feel obliged to call out my name. Afterward, not required to hold myself for 1 to 2 hours."
Well, Kyle Smith, now that you've made some of our audience laugh and alienated the rest of our audience.
That's my goal.
That's your goal. I'm wondering, like, one of the reviews of your book, the first line was, "Move over Bridget Jones and all her chick-lit sisters." Do you see your book as being like the male answer to chick-lit?
Yeah, it is. It's Bridget Jones from the guy's point of view. It's about a guy who works at a tabloid newspaper and is starting to wonder if he has passed his sell-by date as a bachelor.
Now, the Nick Hornby novel High Fidelity figures into your novel, and High Fidelity, the book, which was adapted into a film, is about a guy who owns a used record store, has trouble with relationships, and organizes everything in his life into a series of top 5 lists. You write, "Every girl I know has read this book, and they all want, or think they want, to meet a guy like the guy in the book. More specifically, they want to meet the guy who wrote the book." What impact did High Fidelity have on you as a writer, more particularly as the writer of this book?
It was a tremendous impact. I remember when I picked up the book, I was in Stratford-on-Avon in England in 1996, and I read it all the way through on the train back to London. And it was just like an emotional thunderbolt. It just hit me immediately in the heart. And I think a lot of guys read this book and feel exactly the same way. It's like you're reading your own life story. And if anyone feels that way about this book, then I've succeeded.
I'm paraphrasing here, but one of the things that he says is that you can't really have a relationship with anybody unless their record collection could talk to your record collection and get along. Do you feel that way about relationships, too?
Yeah, there's so many things that can go wrong when people are trying to meet and find a connection. You know, I know a girl who was set up on a date with a guy who was both a lawyer and a documentary filmmaker. He's tall and creative and rich and handsome. The girl went on one date with him. She wouldn't even consider a second date because she said he smokes and he's from Queens. I know guys who can't take a girl seriously if she hasn't seen Apocalypse Now. I know girls who can't take a guy seriously if he's wearing the wrong shirt.
Do you have any criteria like that yourself?
The longer you've been around, the longer you start to see that you're no prize yourself, and you'd, you'd better you'd better look a little deeper. And I think the character in Love Monkey is a guy who's starting to plumb the depths of his own shallowness, and maybe he's a little bit better as a boyfriend at the end than he is at the beginning.
There's a passage in Love Monkey after the main character has met the woman who he really falls for head over heels, and he describes what it is that he loves about her. Would you read that passage?
Sure. She loves blue velvet, but also Meet Me in St. Louis. The Virgin Suicides, but also Powerpuff Girls. She has read Sylvia Plath, but never interpreted her writing as a call to stop shaving her armpits. She's on antidepressants, but doesn't brag about it. She does not wear glasses, but she wishes she did. She does not say, you do the math, or at the end of the day, or don't go there. She lost her virginity in a treehouse. I want to buy her books and jewelry. Being with her is weird and familiar at the same time, like a memory of the future. You know how when you're young, you always think you're going to meet your ideal? You know, a woman with great hair and clothes who doesn't talk about her hair and clothes? A woman who does not believe whatever is a sentence? A woman who eats steak? A woman who isn't trying to meet Wall Street guys? A woman who neither hates her mother nor is obsessed with pleasing her?
How did you put together that profile?
Well, I think those two paragraphs took months to write. Whenever I would sort of think of a sentence that was part of this ideal, I would sort of add it to the mix, and there was a lot of writing and rewriting. This is one of the more difficult passages to write because it's not very jokey.
Now, I'm interested in that part, that how he's interested in a woman with great hair and clothes who doesn't talk about her hair and clothes. That's the paradox, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
You want the great hair and clothes, but you don't even want somebody who talks about it or thinks about it.
Yeah, we're all superficial, and we don't want to be reminded of it, I guess.
You know, one of the things your character loves about this woman is that she likes Blue Velvet and Meet Me in St. Louis. She likes the Virgin Suicides and Powerpuff Girls. I'm wondering if you think on the whole that men and women of your generation have different tastes, and if you can judge men and women who you know based on what they like.
Yeah, we probably shouldn't do that, but we all do. I mean, it's so much a part of our lives, you know, these movies and things that we relate to ourselves, and we make so many assumptions about a person based on whether it's the type of person who would prefer a David Lynch movie or a Farrelly Brothers movie. But as I've always said, dating to me is 2% sex and 98% deciding where to eat. So it's the 98% you probably have to worry about.
You were actually in the Gulf War.
That's right.
Which I wouldn't have guessed from reading your book.
Yeah.
The character in the book does not seem like a character who would voluntarily be in the military.
Yeah, I didn't work that into the book. It's actually not right for the character. I'm not quite sure how I wound up in the Army myself. I was a sort of left-wing pacifist growing up, and my hero was Hawkeye Pierce on MASH. And I wanted to go to Yale, and I couldn't afford to do it without an ROTC scholarship. And then, much to my surprise, I was not only picked for active duty, but I was sent to the Gulf.
Did you feel like you were suited for the military?
Oh, no, absolutely not. I actually wrote a memoir about being in the Army, which is effectively like David Sedaris goes to war. I felt like the worst person to be in uniform over there because I just wanted to read books. I didn't want to kill anyone. I didn't even want to march. I can barely keep pace with a running cadence.
So what did you do in the war?
I was a platoon leader in an adjutant general company. The adjutant general is the branch of the military that keeps everyone's paperwork. And when the killers went forward, they sort of left us behind, and we were basically speed bumps in northern Saudi Arabia. We were speed bumps. If the Iraqis had decided to move forward and plunge into Saudi Arabia, I definitely would have had tank tracks right down my back.
How did you deal with giving orders as a platoon leader?
Well, I got better and better at it. I mean, they train you pretty well to make decisions and to carry out orders and to give orders and, the saluting and the uniforms and everything. By the time you've gone through advanced camp and you've had all this drilled into you for 6 weeks, then you kind of feel like you know something.
You're comparatively short. Did that affect your sense of authority or power or ability to defend yourself?
In the military?
Yeah.
No, there's a lot of short people in the military, actually. You know, I think the military draws from a poorer demographic than, say, the Ivy League does, and definitely the Ivy League is a lot taller than the military. There's a lot of sort of seething short guys in the military who are looking for a fight, I think.
Did you believe in the Gulf War in 91?
I did. I mean, especially once I got there, we all just wanted to move forward and get it over with. The last thing we wanted to do was sit there for 6 years and try to see if the sanctions would work.
Mm-hmm. What books did you take with you?
Oh, I was reading John Keegan's The Face of War. I think I had History of Modern Europe there with me. And I had the soundtrack to Les Miserables.
Did you find men who shared your taste in books and music and movies because those things are so important to you?
In the military, not so much. There aren't too many gentleman scholars in the military anymore, unfortunately.
So was that a kind of alienating experience since your taste in books and movies and music is so much a part of who you are?
It was, in a way, but I was no more alienated in the military than I was at Yale, because I was just about the only working-class kid I knew at Yale, and in the military I was just about the only Ivy Leaguer around, so it really was just the shoes on the other foot, but either way I sort of stuck out.
After you got home from serving in the military, when you were trying to meet women, was it helpful or not helpful to tell them that you'd come back from the war?
Well, at the time, I had a serious girlfriend. I was actually in London seeing my girlfriend when we got the alert back in Germany to get ready to go to Saudi Arabia. So at that moment, I became AWOL, unfortunately. And I made the decision to stay in London with my girlfriend and be AWOL because I hadn't seen her in over a year, and take the consequences when I got back. So obviously, it was a girlfriend I had from Yale. It was right after I'd gotten out of Yale, and she was from a family where everyone, including her, was totally anti-war and totally pacifist. So I wouldn't say that the military is a great turn-on for young liberal women.
What happened after you went AWOL?
Well, I finally came back a few days later, and my commander back in Germany sort of said, well, you kind of pulled a fast one, and you shouldn't have done that, but you're going to Saudi Arabia, and I guess that's punishment enough.
So no brig for you, huh?
No brig for me. I mean, we have an old expression in the Army. What's the worst thing they can do to me? Make me join the Army?
Right.
I took a chance, and, you know, I was 23.
Does that seem very far in the past now?
Oh, yeah, it does. It was a world away. I mean, it was just a completely different time. Nothing could be farther from my existence in Manhattan, where I, you know, go to a nice air-conditioned office every day and sort of swap one-liners with other journalists. And, you know, my worst problem is what kind of coffee I'm going to have on my coffee break.
Well, Kyle Smith, I want to thank you a lot for talking with us.
Thank you.
Kyle Smith is the author of the novel Love Monkey.